All right, so we'll go ahead and get started. There's a couple of open seats up front if people want to move forward. Don't all rush up there at the same time. I want everybody to be safe. I'd like to thank everybody for coming. I know there are a couple of things working against me for this session. The first is it's Friday. You've been at the conference all week. The second is it's the last session of the day. Folks have flights to get home. They may have the Halloween holiday to attend to. But I thank you for coming. Since we've got a smaller group of folks, we can make this a little more interactive. If you guys just want to holler out questions as we get started, as we're walking through this, that's absolutely fine. I think we'll be able to manage the time okay. But I'd like to thank you guys for coming. My name is Matt Winkler. I'm a program manager on the big data team at Microsoft. The big data team is responsible for running both the internal big data infrastructure that powers things like Bing, as well as our Hadoop services inside of Azure. And so I spend a lot of time thinking about Hadoop, thinking about big data, and thinking about how that applies into the cloud. And today, one of the things we're going to be talking about is how the cloud makes Hadoop better in a number of different ways. And so quick show of hands, how many people are using Hadoop today? One? Okay. Awesome. So one of the things we won't be doing in this session, we won't be going into a really deep dive into Hadoop or how to use Hadoop or how to write queries with Hadoop. But what we will be doing is focusing on what are the motivations for why I'd be interested in leveraging the cloud with Hadoop. And then we'll talk through three different ways we can approach that problem. The first one is through leveraging infrastructure as a service. The second is by leveraging Hadoop as a service. The third will then be hybrid scenarios and how those kind of play together. And so that's where we're going to start off. So also, how many people are doing things in the cloud today? Okay, a couple more. Good. And how many people are interested in doing hybrid things where they're doing both cloud and on-prem at the same time? Okay. And so a little bit of background, just because I know that based on kind of the folks that raised their hand for understanding Hadoop, Hadoop is an open source project that's an entire ecosystem of projects at this point in time for processing big data. It originated as an open source implementation of the Google File System paper and the Google MapReduce paper about 10 years ago. And since then, it's really blossomed to almost become the industry standard for when you have a lot of data, you're going to use Hadoop to process that. And what I mean by process big data, that could be everything from an ETL job where I just want to go over data and clean it up. It could be writing complex SQL queries, you know, joining a bunch of tables together, doing a lot of interesting aggregations to generate reports. And then it's also evolved simply beyond query to start, there's a number of NoSQL database offerings that are built on top of Hadoop. And there are also stream processing solutions that are built on top of Hadoop. And so we see a lot of customers today in Azure, and then we see a lot internally at Microsoft that have big data problems, whether it's the telemetry that's coming from Windows devices or the copies of the internet that Bing has to keep to ask it questions. And those types of problems, those types of data sets, demand a different type of processing. We can't just load it into Excel and get a pivot table over the copy of the internet. You'd have to have a really big machine to do that. And then the second one is, if you think about a copy of the internet, it's not a rectangular shape, right? And there's not necessarily rows and columns. There's a lot of structure that's deeply nested that I'd want to get into. And so let's talk a little bit about why you'd be interested in leveraging the cloud for big data workloads. And we'll walk through this both in terms of why I'd be interested in doing cloud and why I'd be interested in doing things on premises. And some of these are very, you could look at this and say, hey, this is the list of reasons why I should think about the cloud in general. You know, but this is really what we see when we think about people who want to do a big data workload. When you think about doing that on-prem, that's a fairly capital-intensive purchase. You know, if you want to get 100 nodes of something deployed, you probably have to go a number of layers up in the organization to find the person who can write the check that will all of a sudden install 100 servers and the racks and the power units in their data centers. And so the cloud is interesting from the perspective of being able to say, hey, I don't actually need 100 nodes all the time, or I'd really like to be sure if I actually need 100 nodes. You know, the way virtual machines are built, the way our Hadoop service is built, it's on a, we quote it on a per hour basis, but we actually bill it on a per minute basis. And so if you think about, okay, I could spin up 100 nodes at 32 cents a node and play around with that for 2 hours, that's substantially more reasonable, and most of us can probably put that on our expense reports rather than, oh, by the way, I ordered 100 servers, they'll be here next week. The second is around cost optimization, and this kind of follows from the elasticity point. You know, an on-premises Hadoop cluster, you generally size it based on the amount of data that you have to store. And it's a pretty simple formula. If you need to store a petabyte of data, you want to make sure you've got 3 copies of that so you've got redundancy. So you need 3 petabytes of total storage. You find the biggest hard drives you can buy, so 3 terabytes. And if I've got all my zeros in the right places, I'd need 1,000 of those. And then I figure out how many hard drives can I slot into a machine. And that's going to roughly determine how many machines that I need. And then you could also figure out how many racks you need by machines into racks. And if you get big enough, how many rows in a data center or multiple data centers. And that's, once you have that, you've bought it. And if you don't need to use it, you can't really turn half of it off. You can't say, oh, I'm only at half of a petabyte today. I'm going to just not run 50 of those nodes. Whereas the cloud gives us the ability to say, and we'll talk about this when we talk about leveraging cloud storage with Hadoop, all of the cloud providers, and us included, have at the fundamental layer of our cloud a massively scalable storage system where we are going to let you put as much data as you want. And probably every 2 to 3 months, the price goes down. And so that model allows me to say, hey, I'm going to put a petabyte of data into Blob Store, but I'm just playing around. I'm just experimenting. I only need a 10-node cluster. Let me just spin that up. And so that aspect of being able to store really cheaply in the cloud and spin up Hadoop clusters on demand gives me an ability to really optimize my costs. Which can be important. And that plays into the same notion of economic flexibility. I can size my compute independent of my storage needs. The flip side to this, and we see this with a number of customers today, is that they don't need 100 nodes or 200 nodes or 500 nodes all the time, but every now and then they do need it. And so we do see customers who run, hey, I've got my 40-node cluster, it's up and running, and this is what runs my business. But once a month, I need to reconcile all of the financials over the last, or all of the transactions, or all of the sensor data that came in over the last month, and I'm going to spin up a really large cluster. That's another thing that's a little bit harder to achieve on-prem unless you've got a fairly sizable private cloud infrastructure that happens to have that excess capacity sitting around as well. The final reason that we see people thinking about big data workloads in the cloud is really leveraging the cloud provider, Microsoft, for their global footprint. This becomes important when we talk about compliance reasons, and I'll also talk about compliance reasons when we talk about why I'd want to just do it on-prem. But imagine you're a company based in the US and you want to start doing business in Europe, or you want to start doing business in China. And part of what you have is you've got a bunch of devices that are deployed, and they're all emitting a bunch of interesting data. It's great. Then you start talking to your attorneys about the compliance requirements, and they say, this data, we can keep it, but when it originates in China, it has to stay in China. So all you have to do is now you have to buy a data center in China. And that's an even bigger check than getting the 100-node cluster. So you can really look at leveraging the cloud and Azure for a global footprint. We've got, I'll probably get the number wrong, I think it's 19 data centers right now that are on almost every continent. And we've got 2 sitting in China, 2 in Japan. We've got Brazil, Australia, US, Europe. And so that's one reason why you might think about looking to the cloud for a big data workload. Now, why would I want to keep a big data workload on-premises? The biggest reason that we see customers say is really around compliance requirements. You know, there's a particularly when we think about big data, collecting data from sensors, you know, collecting GPS data from my phone if I'm a phone company, there are lots and lots of requirements about who and what and where can that data reside. And so we have a number of customers, for instance, in healthcare. There's a certain set of healthcare data which they, most customers will decide that they are going to keep on-prem. And so if that's where the bulk of your data is going to live, it makes sense to put your Hadoop cluster there. The second reason why we'd think about running Hadoop on-prem really comes down to control. It could be that the type of workload you're interested in running is very, very specific. We've seen this with financial firms and energy firms who have a deep investment in high-performance computing, scientific computing applications, where they want very specific video cards with certain GPUs loaded into all of the nodes because that's how they're offloading and parallelizing a lot of their work. You know, that may be something that Azure doesn't have right now. It may be something that any cloud provider doesn't have, and you really want that level of control. The final reason, and the one probably that we see the most, is when you think about a big data application, your data generally resides close to where it's being generated. And if all of your applications that need to be close to your cluster are running on-prem and those aren't moving anytime soon, then it makes sense to put the Hadoop cluster on-prem. So when do I think about putting Hadoop in the cloud? You know, the biggest case that we see with our customers today, when I look at what customers are doing with the Hadoop service that we have in Azure, it's because the data is being born in the cloud. And what's this is particularly interesting when we look at newer companies, when we look at startups that are kind of starting life saying, I don't want to buy a data center. I don't want to actually own any machines. I just want to go to Azure and have you guys take care of all that for me. Once your app's in the cloud, almost all of the applications, all of the cloud services, they've all got a switch that says, hey, start dumping out a bunch of interesting data, telemetry data, log data, and just put it into cloud storage, right? So that's a very easy way to get a big data problem, and that's why it makes sense to put Hadoop there. Second reason is around global applications. So we work with a number of teams internal to Microsoft that run services that have to run around the world. And the way that they do that is they actually distribute those applications across data centers. And so to serve European customers, the apps running in our European data centers. And so in order to do all the analytics and processing, what they want to be able to do is deploy Hadoop there as well. We talked about the geopolitical and compliance concerns. Now, another reason, and this is one of the easy ways to start using Hadoop in the cloud, even if you're on-prem today, is really around the dev test scenario. And this is the scenario where I want to be able to experiment. I want to be able to go tweak a bunch of knobs and dials and settings on the Hadoop cluster. And I want to do that in a safe environment. I don't want to take down my production Hadoop cluster that somebody just got permission to get the check written for. I don't want to be that guy to take that cluster down. What I'd like to be able to do is I'd like to be able to play around in a smaller environment, in a safe environment, and I can use the cloud very easily for that. These final three reasons are the patterns that we start to think about when we think about the hybrid scenarios. The first is around backup, which is this is a mission-critical application to my business. And when we see companies really embrace big data and really embrace Hadoop, it does become mission-critical. And once it starts becoming that important, you have to start thinking about how do I protect this? How do I protect this if there's an issue in my data center, if I lose power, how can I keep my business going? The second following from that is around geo-redundancy. Not only do I want to have a backup of that, I actually want to have a failover plan. I want to be able to say, holy cow, if something catastrophic happens, how can I actually handle this in a different data center and keep my business moving? The final one is a scenario that we've seen a couple of our customers do. And this one's a little not intuitive at first, and it's bursting to cloud. And you might say, wait a minute, like, it's big data. Like, a petabyte of data doesn't burst anywhere unless you load it into a UPS truck with a bunch of hard drives and send it somewhere. But what we've seen here is customers who have data actually in both places, in the cloud and on-prem, will leverage that elastic nature of the cloud, will leverage the ability that they can get 500 nodes on demand in order to, for that once a month job, they can size their on-prem cluster to 100 nodes and life's happy. And then once a month, they can actually go to the cloud and scale out to 500 nodes. So now we're going to talk about the options that we have when we think about running Hadoop in the cloud. And the first one is to really leverage infrastructure as a service. And the way I like to think about this is running your Hadoop in our cloud. The benefit of the infrastructure approach is that it gives you absolutely the most control. If you want to run on a specific build of the kernel and your own special version of Hadoop, you are fully empowered to go do that. We will give you the VMs. We'll let you get those set up and get running. You can configure every knob and dial that we surface on those VMs, and you've got full control. Now, that control comes at a little bit of a cost, which is you still have to go and set up the cluster, figure out how you're going to move data in and out of it, manage patching, so when the OS needs to get updated, when Hadoop needs to get updated, you have to go do that. And then the final thing is, you know, from Microsoft's perspective, at that point, we're selling you VMs. If you want support for Hadoop, you're going to have to go and acquire that. If you want, to get all the, you have to manage all of the licenses and kind of all of those issues. But we see there are a number of customers that are doing this today in Azure at fairly sizable scale. I think one of the larger customers is running a 500 node cluster almost all the time. And so this works out to be a really great option for them. They had a Hadoop cluster that was running on-prem. They wanted to start moving a lot of their infrastructure into the cloud. And so IaaS is a great way for them to get started. Now we'll flip over to a demo. And this is kind of fun. This is what I'm about to show is new as of, I believe, this week. And so inside of Azure, you could certainly go and deploy Hadoop on your own, create any number of VMs, deploy scripts to them, use something like Chef or Puppet, however you'd like to do distributed deployment. One of the things that we introduced this week in the Azure Marketplace is we actually have templates and patterns for two of the most popular Hadoop distributions to go ahead and take care of deploying that for you. And so if you go in to the Marketplace, if I search for Hadoop, what we can see here is I've got Cloudera and Hortonworks. And those are the two big distribution vendors. By selecting one of these, I can read a little bit, oh, what do I get with this? What do I get with the Cloudera release? And then I can go ahead and create that. And what this is going to do is this is going to ask me just a couple of questions around which resource group do I want to deploy it to? What's my SSH key? I can do a little bit of configuration in terms of what's the node size that I'd like to have and what location. And then when I click create, that's going to turn around and deploy that. And what this is doing is all of that work around setup of a Hadoop install, it's going to take care of that for you and get you a bunch of IaaS machines up and running. At the end of this process, you're going to have a set of machines running in IaaS that have Hadoop configured and running, and then it's your cluster. Go ahead and party on. Under the covers, this is a good example of the Azure Resource Manager, which is a new capability that's being introduced that allows us to say, hey, within this resource group, I have these storage accounts and these IP addresses and these virtual networks and these compute nodes, and I want them configured this way. So this is a template that's an example of the type of customization that you could go ahead and do yourself. If you wanted to deploy your own Linux image, if you wanted to deploy your own Hadoop distro. So that's how you go ahead and get started with that. That's in the portal. That's in the preview portal today, if you want to go do that. Azure also supports the scripted deployment of VMs and applications onto VMs. So if you're more comfortable with PowerShell or Bash, you can go ahead and deploy clusters that way. And so really at this layer, you know, this is where you get all of that control. You can inject whatever components and startup activities that you'd like into that. So any questions on deploying to IaaS? Yeah. I'm sorry, what was the question? Yeah, so the question is, are there any plans to reduce the number of nodes to deploy Hortonworks or Cloudera? That's a good question. I'm not sure. I know that feedback's been brought up once or twice. You're not the first person to say that. And so that we talk a lot with both Hortonworks and Cloudera, and you know we've given that feedback back to them. Yeah. Any other questions? So the next thing that I'd like to talk about, and this starts, so that first one is you're going to leverage the cloud to get a bunch of machines, and that's really what you're leveraging the cloud for. This is kind of the next step in that evolution, and this is really around leveraging Blob Store for a lot more flexibility. And so a number of those things that I talked about up front, kind of around that economic flexibility about being able to size your cluster independently, are enabled when you put your data into Blob Store and create a Hadoop cluster that can access that data. You know, this is where that size becomes independent. And then the second point here is that your clusters are then stateless. And what this means is that if I want to spin up three clusters so that you and you and you can all play in your own cluster but on the same set of data, I can do that. It also means it's very easy to tear down and recreate a cluster. And so if I want to deploy onto bigger nodes, if I want to change the Hadoop distribution, if I want to experiment with other new Hadoop components, I can spin those up, and then I can access that data that sits inside of Blob Store. You know, and the way that to think about this when you're running Hadoop in the cloud is you've actually got two different patterns to leverage cloud storage. The first one is you spin up your Hadoop cluster, and for most of the time, that Hadoop cluster is actually reading off of the local disks or the disks that are local to the VMs, right? And this is the typical standard HDFS approach. The way that you'd leverage cloud storage here is that as you started up your cluster, you would move data in from cloud storage. And then on the flip side to that, you could actually back up or age your data out to Blob Store. And that would also enable you to say, hey, I actually want to, this would give you the ability to have a failover cluster as well. You could have two clusters that are sitting on the same set of data. You could fail one over, move the data, and you'd be fine. We see customers who do this either because they're going to be running a Hadoop cluster 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long. We also see some customers who do this in that transient cluster pattern because they want to use the local disks almost as a warm cache rather than reading from Blob Store. The second approach is to leverage cloud storage as your default file system. And what this means is Hadoop is fantastically extensible. You really can, at almost every layer of the stack, plug something new into the system. And the file system is no different. And so when we deploy an HD Insight cluster, the default file system actually talks directly to Azure Blob Store. And what this means is that any app that can write to or read from Blob Store can access data or produce data for that cluster to consume. But from the Hadoop perspective, all you see is a path, right? Because it's the default file system, if I go to /foo-bar/blah, it's transparent to me as a pig script or a hive script. The one thing that I would say is this does change the physics of Hadoop a bit, because now you don't have the data sitting on local disks. We see a lot of customers who are willing to take that change in the physics in exchange for that flexibility that they get. And this is one of those, it's tough to say, to provide absolute concrete guidance here. There are cases where reading from cloud storage and writing to cloud storage is faster than local disk. There are other cases where it's not. It really depends on your type of workload, on the type of analysis that you're doing, what types of queries that you're doing. That's how I'd think about that. So next, what we're going to show is a demo where we will be configuring Blob Store in a Hadoop cluster that's running on Linux. So hold on just a sec. And so the way that we're going to do this, so this is a HDP cluster that's running Ambari. That's the dashboard that you see here. And what I need to be able to do is I need to put an entry into htfs-site.xml to have a pointer to the Blob Store account. We'll go into Azure real quick. And let me make this a little bigger. And so here is my Blob Store account, mwinkle HDI. What I would do here is I would go and get the management key, the access key, to talk to the Blob Store account. I'm not going to put that up on the screen right now. Some of you look very quick with a pen and pencil, and I'm afraid you'd write it down, all 85 characters of it. But then from a Hadoop perspective, what I'm going to do is go to the HDFS configuration. Make this a little bigger too. I'd like to go into configuration. And because I've done this before, I know it's all the way down at the bottom. But I want to be able to provide a custom additional properties to htfs-site.xml. And so what I'd do is I'd add a property. And the way that you do this with Azure Blob Store is that you provide a property here, which is fs.azure.youraccountnamehere.blob, and then you put the rest of the URL. And so that's just blob.core.windows.net. And so that becomes your property key. And you just put your account name there for whatever your account name, Blob Store account is. And then you're going to put that access key here. Now, the reason that this works is that one of the things that we did when we were building the HD Insight service, we built this file system adapter. Because Hadoop's really extensible, you can build different file systems. We built a file system that talks to Azure Blob Store. And we then contributed that to Apache. So if you go out to aka.ms/wasp-in-apache, it'll actually take you to the source code and say and show you this is where we checked in the WASP driver. Now, the interesting thing about this, that since it's now just part of Hadoop, has gotten picked up by Hortonworks. So it's in the Hortonworks distro. So out of the box, I can take this and I can make it work with HDP. The folks from Cloudera have published a parcel that they call it, which is used for customizing a Cloudera cluster, which will also pull that in. And so from either a Cloudera cluster or an HDP cluster or a stock Apache Hadoop cluster, you can talk to Azure Blob Store. And the key to doing that is I put in fs.azure, your account name. And you can see I've already got it configured here. But again, I don't want you copying that down. And so now let's see what this looks like. Can folks see that? Should I make it bigger in the back? We good? I'm seeing nodding. Okay. I think that was nodding for good enough, not nodding for bigger. Okay. And so Hadoop FS LS. So this is going to show me my local file system that's running on this machine. This will show me my local file system. And now what I'd like to do, what I'm going to actually pass in now is the path to blob store. And the scheme that we use is WASP. At the time, this stood for Windows Azure Storage Blob. We released this about 3 weeks before we changed the name to Microsoft. We won't be changing the scheme extension name. The other thing you can do here is if you want to do this over HTTPS, so if you want encrypted traffic between your cluster and storage, you can put an S at the end of it. And then we'll go ahead and use HTTPS when we access that. So the next thing I need to do is provide a container. And we'll pick Falcon Backups, because that's what I'm going to show later in the talk. And the syntax here for the URI is container name at account name. And so now what I've done is I've said, hey, let's go out to Blob Store, and we're going to read from that. That's going to read from this local machine here going out to Azure to read from that. Of course. Falcon back up. So it does not work if you put an S at the end of this to make the container secure. This is going to go out. The interesting thing here, you'll see I've got / backed up files. We can find out what's in there. And what's interesting about this, we'll wait for that to come back. It's just, I apologize, it's my day for typos. But we'll pop over to my other machine here. And what I've got here is Cloud Explorer. This is just a blob storage explorer. And this is what my blob store looks like. So inside MWinkle HDI, I've got demo data. I've got Falcon backups. We can see backed up files. We can see three files there. We'll switch back over. And surprise, surprise, there are those three files. Now, the other thing that I could do is if I go to that larger container, the one that's got that's called demo data, this is one that I've actually had a Hadoop cluster hooked up to. And what you'll see here is this looks very similar to when I showed the local file system, when I showed the file system that's running in HDFS. I've got app logs, apps, Hive. If I look up here, I've got app logs, apps, MapRed. I didn't run Hive on this cluster yet. And so from any Hadoop job that I want to write, if I want to write a pig job or a Hive job now, I could submit a pig job and pass in this WASP path, and I'd be able to go read from that. And so what we've shown here is how you can take something like Ambari, you could also just modify the XML files, and insert a configuration value that's fs.azure account name, blah, 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 with the account key, and then that becomes accessible to any of the jobs that are running in this Hadoop cluster. There's another more advanced thing that we can do. There's something in Azure Storage called Shared Access Signatures. Because really, with the management key to Blob Store, it's that gives you full access to the whole Blob Store account. I can write to anything, read from anything, which in a lot of cases is just fine. But there are times where I'd like to say, well, I'd like you to only have read-only access. And so what I can do with that is I can apply a shared access signature with a policy that says you only get read-only access, and by the way, you're only going to get it through next week. And I can apply that to a container. And so then we can actually, through the configuration, we could actually specify, hey, I want to be able to attach to that. And so that gives you a way, as the owner of the storage account, to have more control to say, hey, I'd like you to be able to only have read-only access. I'd like to give you limited access. I'd like to revoke your access. And that all bottoms out at that same thing where we're putting those entries into the configuration. Any questions on that? And so what we'll do then, if I want to be able to move data around, any of my Hadoop utilities will work. So if I want to use distcp, if I want to just do move or copy, I can move between the file systems. So I can move between HDFS and Blob Store or the other way around. And then it's just a matter of how much you want to automate that or script that. You can imagine having a startup job after your cluster boots up to read in a bunch of that data from Blob Store to seed the local HDFS. So the next thing that I'd like to talk about, we're kind of moving further away from the IaaS world, and we're starting to take more dependencies on the cloud and capabilities of the cloud. So we started out with just, please give me some VMs and let me configure them. We took a step up and we said, oh, there's this cloud storage that I'd like to take advantage of. It's a lot cheaper, and it gives me some flexibility. And then the next step up from this is leveraging Hadoop as a service. And this is when we talk about HD Insight, this is Microsoft's managed Hadoop as a service in Azure. And like a lot of things in the cloud, as you move away from kind of all the control that you get in IaaS, you lose a little bit of control, but you get convenience and you get management. And so typically what we see is that this is going to take care of cluster creation on demand, but as you saw now for IaaS, that's actually pretty simple as well. By default, it's going to be integrated with your cloud storage. You know, and then the other thing that we do with HD Insight is that we spend a lot of time thinking about how that's going to integrate with the other pieces and parts of Azure. So for instance, a couple of weeks ago, we announced Storm clusters. Storm is a real-time event processing system that is what Twitter uses to process the Twitter firehose. And so we've deployed, you can deploy a Storm cluster with HD Insight, and we'll go ahead and set it up so you can get it to talk to Event Hubs, which is the service that we have in Azure that can process millions of messages a second being ingested into Azure. And some of the other services that you can choose to integrate with would be Azure Active Directory, Azure Scheduler. We have a number of customers that integrate with Azure SQL Database. This is a pattern of they munge over a lot of data in Blob Store. They get it down to a manageable size, and they then go load that into SQL because that's where they've got their reporting apps, that's where they've got their online applications. The other thing that's nice about this is that you can deploy a cluster of any size, and the time it takes to deploy that cluster remains constant. In about 10 to 15 minutes, we can deploy a 20-node cluster, a 100-node cluster, or a 500-node cluster. If you deploy the 500-node cluster, please remember that you did that and turn it off. Otherwise, you can get angry emails from your boss when the bill comes. I've heard. I don't have personal experience with that. And so let's go ahead and flip over, and we will take a quick spin around using HD Insight, which is our Hadoop as a service. And so I'm going to go into the Azure portal, the non-preview Azure portal. And I'm going to show a little bit of what we can do with HD Insight. And so the nice thing about this, all you need to do to get started with this is have an Azure account. And so there's a free trial you can get. If you've got an MSDN subscription, you can leverage that. And then all you need to do is walk up and say, hey, I'd like to create something. What I'd like to create is a data service, and I'd like to create an HD Insight cluster. You've got three choices that we surface here. You can create a Hadoop cluster, an HBase cluster, or a Storm cluster. Talked a little bit about Storm. It's for real-time event processing. HBase is a NoSQL store that's built on pieces of the Hadoop ecosystem, and it's massively scalable. My favorite application that's written on top of HBase is one probably everybody in this room has used, which is the Facebook messaging app. So if you go into Facebook and send a message to your mom, like, hey, everything's okay, I like the pictures you sent, that actually lands in a giant HBase cluster that runs at Facebook. And so we see customers who are doing kind of Internet of Things telemetry type applications, they leverage HBase for that. All of these things follow the same pattern. We've got two ways to create the cluster in the portal. The first is the quick create. The second is the custom create. Quick create is going to ask you four questions. What do you want to call this thing? How big of a cluster do you want? Tell me your password. And what storage account do you want to associate it with? I answer those four questions. I click go. I go take a brisk walk around the building. And I come back. And in about 10 minutes, that cluster is going to be up and running. I'd like to point out two things here. This limit of 16 is not a hard limit in the system. It's just the quick create experience is really around somebody who wants to try out the service. We previously had 32, 64, and at one point I think we had 128 on there. Some people have a tendency when they want to try something out, they want to try out the best. And so they go down to the bottom and they click go. We learned that that made customers unhappy when their bill came. And so we've constrained this a little bit. But if you want more nodes, you can certainly put them in custom create. There are quotas in the system. If you don't like the quota, just give us a call and we'll bump that up as high as you want. The second thing is with the storage accounts, you'll see here, these are all of the storage accounts that I have inside of Azure, inside of my Azure subscription that I can bind to. This is going to determine the data center that we deploy to. We don't ever want you to deploy a Hadoop cluster in one place and your storage in another place. Physics is not your friend on that one. The other thing is from an economics perspective, we charge when you take data center, when you take data out of the data center in storage. That's what all of the cloud providers do. So you'll have an egress charge if the data leaves your data center. And so if you put a giant Hadoop cluster on top of a petabyte of data in another data center, that can also result in a frown when the bill comes. The second way we can create a cluster here is custom create. The way to think about this is where we're going to start to give you a couple of more knobs and dials. We'll call this Tech Ed Demo 2. I can pick which cluster type. I can pick which version of a cluster I'd like to deploy. Basically, an HD Insight cluster version wraps up a version of the Hadoop distribution, which in turn wraps up various versions of Hadoop components. This is one of the interesting side effects of bringing open source out in a service like this. Each one of the various components of Hadoop, Hive, Pig, Uzi, Mahout, Scoop, Flume, and a bunch of others, they're all independently governed projects. That all have a chair and a committee that needs to decide things. And as you can imagine, if you've ever worked with a committee, everybody has opinions. And so all of those version at different numbers. There are certain Hadoop components that are at version 10. There are others that are at version 0.14. And so we wrap all of that up as an HD Insight cluster version. That's what you should think about from a capability perspective. And if you ever want to know how that decomposes, you can just go, there's a help page that we update pretty frequently with what versions of the components are there. I can then specify data nodes. So I can have at most 23 in this subscription. They got a little frustrated with me. The last time I did this demo, I could do 350. But they decided that that's probably a little bit large for doing demos. And then I can do two things here. I can deploy either into a region or a virtual network. So virtual networks are kind of cool. This is how you can compose various pieces and parts of Azure together so that they all sit on the same network, and so they can all see each other. That includes being able to VPN to your cluster or establish a site-to-site VPN so that your cluster can talk on-prem. Here I'll pick Japan West. Configure the username and the password. The other thing I can do here is I can configure a Hive or an Uzi Metastore. So this is important when we think about that pattern of your cluster being stateless. We're putting all of our data in Blob Store. So if my cluster goes away, that's fine. But almost all of our customers use something called Hive. And Hive is just SQL. Everybody in here who can write SQL can write Hive. And the way Hive needs to function is it needs a catalog. It needs to know, oh, there is a table that looks like this that has these columns, and this is where it sits inside of Blob Store. That catalog is called the Hive Metastore. And what you can do here, we give you the option to say, I would like to store that Metastore in a SQL database. And so what that means is not only am I keeping my data external, I'm keeping all of my schema external to the cluster as well. And that means all I have to do is tear down, spin up a cluster, and everything's going to look exactly the same. All of my tables are going to be there. Life's going to be great. We also have customers who will do this in order to share all of their table definitions across all of their clusters. So they'll have multiple clusters all pointing at the same Metastore. And so that when they make updates and say, oh, now we've got the November numbers table, everybody has access to that. The final thing that we'll do here is attach to a storage account. You'll see I don't have a storage account in Japan West, so it's saying I need to create a storage account and container name. The other thing that we can do here is specify additional storage accounts. Again, 7 is not the upper limit here. It's just that this wizard looks strange if we put more than 7 additional tabs out the side. The limit in the system is somewhere around 60. And if I want to do that, the way that I'll do that is I'll go to the command line. And so here I've got the Azure PowerShell tools. And what you'll see here is that there's actually a set of HD Insight-based commandlets. So underneath every Azure service, there sits a big REST endpoint that is kind of the global control plane for between you, Azure, and your credit card. Where you walk up and you say, oh, I'd like a database, and I'd like 3 VMs, and I'd like an HD Insight cluster. Right? And so there's this REST API that sits out there that handles all of that. You issue the request to that, and then we will go provision the resources, create whatever you've asked for. On top of that, there's a .NET API, there's a Python API, a Java API, there's a Node.js API. And then we've built a PowerShell experience and a cross-platform experience on top of that. And so that gives you all of the knobs and dials that we expose. For HD Insight, there are 2 that we don't surface in the portal today. And that's the ability to deploy custom code. So if I want to deploy custom jar files to my cluster, I can do that. And the other thing is if I want to set specific Hadoop configuration commands. Configuration settings. So all of the Hive site XML and core site XML, all of those files, I can provide those settings up front at cluster creation time via this, or if I want to run on Linux or a Mac, I've got the cross-plat as well. If we pull up this, you can see we'll do Azure HD Insight. And this will run, sorry, that doesn't look great. So this will run, this is actually built on top of the Node.js SDK. And what you can see here are all of those same commands. The cool thing about this is this runs on Windows, this runs on a Mac, this runs on Linux. And so you can provision an HD Insight cluster from your Mac and party on. Once I've got the cluster up and running, I'm going to want to do something with it. So what I can do there is we've got a query console that we've built. And what this is just a simple UI that's going to help you get started, and it's going to help you write Hive queries as well. And if I had typed my password correctly, I would get in there. But that query console, let's see. So that query console is going to let me write Hive queries. It's going to show how you can go up against Azure websites logs and pull those in and run some interesting analytics on top of that. But that's how I go ahead and get started with Hadoop as a service. The other thing that I'd like to point out about this that's different than the case of running Hadoop in infrastructure as a service is that when we say that it's Hadoop as a service, we manage it for you. And what I mean by that is we have an SLA not just on we'll keep these VMs up, but our SLA to you, our commitment to you is that we will keep your Hadoop cluster up with a certain amount of with 3 nines of availability. And what that means is that you don't have to have an operator, an IT pro, running your Hadoop cluster. We do that for you. That's what we're doing up in Azure. And so the nice thing about that is if your cluster breaks at 3 in the morning, it generally will be my phone that will ring rather than you. And then the other part of that is it's also fully supported. And what that means is that if you have a problem with deploying a Hadoop cluster, if you have a problem with your Hadoop query, my Hive query isn't performing well, you can open a support incident and Microsoft supports you the whole way through the Hadoop stack. And typically when you look at running in IaaS, that's something you have to acquire as a support agreement, or you have to bring on some consultants, you have to bring on folks who kind of deeply understand Hadoop. So that was HD Insight, Microsoft's Hadoop as a service. Any questions on that? Okay. The last thing that I'd like to talk about today is really around the hybrid scenarios. And this is something we've seen, I would say, in the last 6 to 12 months, we've seen a lot more interest in this. Hadoop is achieving greater penetration into the enterprise, and we're seeing more and more companies who want to take advantage of the cloud but also have an existing investment in Hadoop, and they're trying to figure out how these two things work. And so really the key scenarios that we see here, there's really three of them. The first one is around offsite backup. Once I've got my shiny 100-node Hadoop cluster running in my data center, I want to protect that data. And so if I've got a petabyte of data that's sitting inside of that cluster, it's got to move somewhere. And cloud storage is a great place to go and put that data. And then what that enables me to do is I can either simply have that so that I can sleep well at night and know that if something were to happen, all of my data is in the cloud. Or I can use that for more advanced DR, disaster recovery, or failover scenarios. The couple of things you can do there, all of the things that we talked about, if you want to use infrastructure as a service and have the exact same environment that you can just flip a switch and deploy into Azure, you can do that. The other thing that we've seen for folks who don't want to go that far is to say, I will spin up, in the event that I need to fail over, I can spin up an HD Insight cluster on top of that. And because we're all running the same Hadoop, it's all the same Apache Hive and Pig, those jobs are portable and they'll move between those scenarios just fine. The other thing that we've seen from that perspective is that also leads to a dev test scenario as well. If you've got that 100-node cluster that's running on-prem, that's your production cluster. You've sized it, you've tuned it specifically for the workloads that are critical to the business. Imagine you're an energy company that is managing a series of electrical plants that all have generators that are emitting tons and tons of data. It is critical to me to get the reports, to get the data out and processed as quick as possible. And so I want to be very careful about saying, oh, and by the way, this is also where our data scientists can just roam free and play and use all 100 nodes for whatever machine learning that they want to go do. And so what we see there is people who are looking to solve the problem of, I want to work on the same set of data, but I need to enable a development and test environment that is not my production environment. But I also may want to do that at scale. And so, typically it's pretty tricky for me to get an 100-node dev cluster. But again, if I, I can spin up a 100-node cluster, I can run it for 30 minutes to see how my job does, and I can tear it down, and it cost me probably about $16. So that's kind of interesting as you think about managing your IT spend, but also getting that scale. And then that final scenario is really around bursting to cloud. And this is all, you could look at this and say this is the same data movement pattern that we have with the offsite backup. We're just doing something different with it. And the pattern here is, hey, I'm moving that data back to Azure. That data is sitting in Azure. And if I need to spin up a much larger cluster on top of that, I can do that whenever I want to. And I've got the file system driver so that that will just work. And so those are kind of the three patterns from a hybrid perspective that we've seen. The other one that I won't show a demo of, but I'll talk about, is my data warehouse sits on-prem. I've got an appliance. I've got a finely tuned, massive data warehouse that's sitting on-prem. I've got an application that's globally deployed on hundreds of thousands or millions of devices that are emitting events that go land in the cloud. What we'll see folks do there is spin up Hadoop in the cloud, do a bunch of analytics on that, and then they will connect back to that data warehouse to put a much smaller set of data into the data warehouse. One of my favorite examples is a customer that we have here in Europe that manufactures wind turbines or equipment for wind turbines. And a wind turbine produces a ton of data. Every 25 milliseconds, it's emitting some interesting set of statistics about this is what's happening to me. And if you think about it, there's a lot of value in that data. The customer has been able to understand the efficiency of the turbines. They've been able to do predictive maintenance, which is to say, hey, we think this is a failure criteria, and we want to be able to detect that before we get there or do preventative maintenance to prevent you getting to the catastrophic failures. But if you think about it, if you think about your data warehouse, you'd probably never have anybody who'd need to go to the data warehouse and get the one row that has that at this 25 millisecond interval, this is what happened, right? What you want to be able to do is aggregate that because those folks may operate at the minute or 5 minute or hour granularity. And so you use Hadoop in the cloud to go do that first or second level aggregation to get it to a more manageable size. And manageable could still be a bunch of gigabytes or even terabytes. And that's the data that you move into your data warehouse sitting on-prem. And the way that you'd go and enable that is through the virtual networking capability. You can do that secure VPN connection, but you can also do something that's called ExpressRoute, which is where you can get a very high bandwidth pipe from your colo where you've got your data warehouse located and the HD Insight cluster and anything else that you've got running in Azure as well. And so that's a scenario, that's a hybrid scenario that we see where people are leveraging the cloud but then writing the refined data, the process data, back into their tools that are all living on-prem. And so the way that I'm going to show this is I'm going to go back to the the machine that I've got running over here. This is actually running, I upgraded it the other day, so it's actually running HDP 2.2. This is the latest version of the Hortonworks distribution. And it's running an Apache component called Falcon. And Falcon is a component around data movement. And what we'll show here is how we've configured Falcon to talk to Azure Blob Store. So what we'll show here, so this is Apache Falcon. This is the website. This is the web application that gets installed with it. There are a couple of key notions to Falcon. The first is clusters. This is this is exactly what it sounds like. This is the cluster that I'm going to, the set of clusters that I want to manage movement between. A set of data sets or feeds. And then a set of processes that define the how we want the data to move. And so let's go look at what we're doing here. And so what we'll start off with is we will start off with our primary cluster. And these are all, there's a bunch of XML up here, but this is actually pretty easy to go right. I've got my cluster that's running on-prem. I provide the address, the local addresses for how do I read data out of this, how do I write data, how do I execute a job, how do I send it messages. And then I register that cluster with the system. I can register multiple clusters if I want to. But now let's get to the interesting thing, which is the how do I define the feed? And the feed is defined, we can define a little bit of metadata and tags here. We specify a frequency for the feed. And the frequency for the feed says, hey, this is how often I want you to run. So here I'm saying every 2 minutes. And then I specify what are the clusters. I've got a source cluster and a target cluster. How long do I want this running and what data do I want to pull? I can actually specify a retention policy. So this is kind of nice to use the infinite scalability of the cloud to say, oh, I'm only going to keep the most recent 90 days worth of data in my cluster on-prem. I'll keep all time in the cloud, or I'll keep the last year in the cloud, whatever. You know, we have customers who do this from just a data size perspective, but then we also have customers who do this from a data compliance perspective. There's only certain data. After so many days, they have to dispose of certain data. So here what I'm saying is I'd like to keep this for 90 days. After that, I want to delete it. Here is my path locally, so the Falcon demo path. And then I have the backup cluster. I want to keep it for 36 months. And the important thing that I'm doing here is that I'm specifying the path is that WASP path. Right? And so what this says is that, oh, what I'm going to actually be doing is moving this data. Every 2 minutes, I'm going to look in this directory. I'm going to find out what's new, and I'm going to move it on over to Blob Store. And then if I want to be able to deploy this, I just go into the command prompt and I have to do three things to set things up. First, I have to register the clusters, I have to register the feed, and then I have to say, OK, feed, start going. Just putting the feed there, just doing the submit is going to put it there, register it with the system, but it doesn't actually start the process from going. Hitting dash schedule here, we'll go ahead and kick that off. We'll go here, we'll see, oh, that's that basic demo feed that I just showed. This will show the history of the various runs that have occurred. And then the other thing that I can see here is I can actually see a bit of a dependency view. It's pretty simple for this workflow that we've defined, but as it gets more complex, you could certainly you get that visualization. And then once that's up and running, I can just add more data. I did this before I came here. And that directory that I showed in here, these are three text files that I wrote into HDFS locally on this machine. It reached the 2 minute interval, and it kicked off that copy process and moved the files over here. And so this is a way that I can start very simply moving data from my on-prem cluster up to the cloud. The other thing that I can do here, you can get more sophisticated with this. Most of the time we see customers have data that's laid out in a directory structure that's based on date. So it'll be year-month-day-hour. You can program against those entries. And so you can say, hey, I know that every hour, we're going to increment hour by one. Go look in that directory. So if you've got, if you're partitioning your data that way, which is a very logical way to partition your data, you can honor that as well with Falcon, and it'll go ahead and program against that and move the data for you. So we're on the home stretch here. You know, what I wanted to talk about today was really kind of give the overview of the various ways we can leverage the cloud with Hadoop, whether that's running Hadoop in IaaS, leveraging cloud storage, running it in IaaS, or looking at the hybrid scenarios where we're actually running Hadoop on-prem and we're just leveraging the cloud for something as simple as backup. The point I'd like to make here is that these patterns aren't exclusive. It's not that you only do one of them and don't do the other one. They're very complementary, and you know, it's one of those things where you really can mix and match. The other thing that I'd like to kind of really try and drive home is that there's a lot of flexibility that you get by building on top of Blob Store, right? And what Blob Store is going to enable you to do is open up to any application that can speak HTTP, can read data or write data to Blob Store, right? We've got, Microsoft has frameworks and clients for Azure Storage in just about every language you'd want. If there's one that we don't have that you'd like to have, it's a pretty simple REST API underneath the covers, right? And so that, by leveraging Blob Store, it gives you a bunch of flexibility from the Hadoop perspective, but it also opens up the apps that can read to or write from Hadoop. Your website, you don't have to have web developers that know how to author a web app in Java so that it can talk to Hadoop, right? You can just talk to Blob Store using whatever language you're authoring your web app in. So I'd like to thank everybody for coming. There's a set of resources here for the track. I think most of, I think the hands-on labs, it's probably too late to do those. Or the instructor-led labs, it's probably too late to do those. There's some other information up here. The other thing that I'd like to ask, I know it is the last session of the day, but I would very much appreciate if you'd go ahead and submit feedback. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you didn't like. That helps me get better, and that helps us at Microsoft get better at tailoring the content to you. You know, this is my fourth Tech Ed Europe. This is my favorite event to travel to. I love this event and chatting with folks. You guys always have really awesome questions, and so I appreciate that. That makes it fun for me as a speaker. And so I think I'm at the last slide. Maybe I have one more to go. Thank you. And if you've got questions, let me know. Otherwise, you can find me afterwards. But thanks for coming to TechEd. Thanks for coming to my talk. I appreciate it.